This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, more analysis from the impeachment trial and an update from Jordan Sekulow.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
They're putting on their case. We will put on our case. I'm not going to give you time frames on the case, on how long it will take to do ours, but I will tell you this. We will be putting on both an affirmative case in defense of the president, but also pointing out some of the errors in the case that they presented.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The truth of the matter is, why are we here? Are we having an impeachment over a phone call? Or has this been a three-year attempt to take down a president that was duly elected by the American people? And we're doing this with 10 months to go to a general election. Pretty dangerous for our republic, in my view.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Well, folks, day one of the House manager's case is in the books. I'm Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., and welcome into Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to actually be joined here in just a few minutes by Jordan Sekulow. Of course, Jordan is one of the hosts of this broadcast, the executive director of the ACLJ, but also a member of the president's legal team participating in the ongoing impeachment trial that's happening in the United States Senate. He is going to be joining us to give us an update on the ground, so you're going to want to tune in for that. Probably after this break, we'll be hearing from Jordan, so stay tuned for that. But let me just say right off the top here, we warned you on this broadcast yesterday that if you were going to tune into these proceedings yesterday, that you were going to probably have to settle in for what would be a long, arduous, boring session. And folks, I'm just here to tell you, I think that's what it was. And I will give the benefit of the doubt to those presenting the House manager's case. If you're going to hear from anybody for 8 hours, it is going to be a tall task to keep folks engaged, especially senators who aren't necessarily used to sitting there. So I don't envy the task of the managers, don't necessarily envy the task that the president's legal defense team will have. But I think when the Senate finally adjourned last night, probably everyone in that chamber was a little bit relieved. I will tell you, those of us that were following it were probably a little bit relieved. But it was interesting to me to see today sort of confirmation of that from the American people. We got the ratings back from day one of the trial, which of course was Tuesday, when there was a debate over the rules that would govern these proceedings. And that was probably the more interesting of the 2 days that we have seen, because it was adversarial. Both sides were arguing the motions. You heard from both the managers and the president's legal defense team. Yesterday was just a one-sided affair. And yet, when the numbers came back from the ratings for day one, there was only a total of 11 million daytime viewers across six networks. Now, almost 2.7 million of those were on Fox News. They came in number one. Down the line, it went to about 1.4 million for NBC, but a total of 11 million. And just to kind of put that in comparison, because I know for some of you, you may not know whether 11 million is a big number or a small number. Two recent political events, the James Comey hearings and then the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, both of those registered about 20 million viewers. So day one of the impeachment trial for President Trump, probably the most interesting day that we'll have this week, the adversarial day, only registered a little more than half of what those two recent political events registered. So I think it gives you just a clue of where the American people on this. But here's where we are. It was the first of 3 days that the House managers have to lay out their case. We're going to play some of the sound from that. We're going to play some of the reaction from that. You're going to hear from our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, some of his reaction, both on the media and then when he was leaving the chamber in, late last night. We'll play some of that sound as well. We're also going to play some of the reaction from some of the senators who will be casting a vote in this matter on the end. Some of the ones that Democrats said they thought they had a chance of convincing. I think when you hear me read some of these quotes from these senators that were so-called gettable, I think it's going to tell you the story that the senators sitting in this chamber, they have not been convinced by this case. Also going to be joined after the break by Colonel Wes Smith and Professor Harry Hutchison. We'll go first to Wes to get his reaction since he was not here with us yesterday. But folks, that's where we are. We heard a rehash of the rules on Tuesday, the first day of the manager's case. Yesterday, day two of their case will be ahead. If they want a third day, they get a third day as well. But if you want to be a part of the broadcast, call now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. For those of you who are watching on Facebook or Periscope, during the break we played some of the reaction from our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, last night in the hallways of the United States Senate. They did a little press spray with some reaction. We'll play some of that sound for the full radio audience here coming up in just a little bit. But here, I wanted to go to Colonel Smith, who was not with us yesterday, to get a little bit of reaction. Just to kind of set this conversation up, Colonel Smith, we're getting a similar reaction from the American people and then also some of the senators that were in the chamber. Tanya on Facebook wrote in that it was just too tough to watch yesterday. I would pop in and out throughout the day. And honestly, as I listened to some of the feedback from the senators, I was getting the same reaction from them. Technically, they have to stay in their chair. They have to stay silent. They cannot get up and they cannot leave except for breaks. I think maybe there might have been an occasional breach in decorum in that regards. But I do think it was probably tough to follow. This was a long presentation, basically a repeat in my mind of what was laid out on Tuesday. But I wanted to come to you. You didn't get, weren't able to give us some reaction yesterday. So both days as you watched them, Wes, day one, where we were talking about the rules, and then yesterday as the House managers began their case. Did anything surprise you? What were sort of your top line takeaways?
Well, I just keep thinking about the gravity of what's going on here. And like, I guess, most of the American people, it's pretty laborious and painful to watch at times. And of course, like you, being part of the staff here at ACLJ, we are following it as part of what part of our obligation to follow it. But it is painful at times. It seems to me that the Democrat House managers, they're a bit tone deaf to the American people, along with some of the media outlets, which think that there's just explosive, wonderful, you know, performance by them. But there's a lot of exaggeration. There's a lot of half-truths. And I know we're going to talk about this more in a minute. But you know, when you're sitting before 100 senators who basically are the jury, you don't want to insult them. And they managed to do that, too. But mainly, it's a lot of repetition, as you indicated. Adam Schiff took 2.5 hours to share with the Senate and the American people about 10 minutes worth of information. And it's information that we not only heard Monday when they were supposed to be debating the rules for impeachment, it's the same information that we heard for weeks when they were having the hearings in the House of Representatives. So, you know, it's laborious. It's painful. I think they're a bit tone deaf to where the American people are. That's reflected in how many people are watching. The other thing that strikes me about this whole process in its entirety, then, is that removing a president is the most radical and consequential action that Congress can take. I would argue that it's more radical and more consequential than declaring war, because impeachment strikes at the heart of a constitutional republic and the will of the people. Because of that, impeachment power comes with an obligation, and that obligation is to use it judiciously and fairly. And that's what I see is lacking here. It should be used judiciously and fairly, irrespective of the political party of the president. And that is glaringly absent so far in what we've seen.
Yeah, I've said it a few times over the last few days, and I'll say it again because I do think it's so important. I agree with you, Wes. The sacredness of the American voters, their ability to choose their leaders, has to be defended. And the threshold for removing someone they have selected has to be very high. I think it's pretty clear that threshold hasn't been met in this case. I want to go to Professor Hutchison. Professor, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but some of the sound coming from the United States senators last night as the hearings wrapped up and during the breaks suggested to me that they have also not reacted favorably to some of the attacks, especially from Chairman Nadler. I'll play some sound from Jay Sekulow on that in just a minute as well. But Lisa Murkowski, Senator Murkowski's spokesperson, told the press that Senator Murkowski said that I took it as very offensive, speaking about Chairman Nadler's accusation that the Senate was participating in a cover-up. As one who is listening attentively and working hard to get to a fair process, I was offended. Professor, I know you've been involved in many of these cases in the past. I mean, offending what is essentially the jury, I know some would object to that, but it's offending the people that have to vote in the end. Harry, that can't be what the House managers were after, and yet I think that's what they accomplished yesterday and on Tuesday.
I think that's correct, and I think to some extent it was very, very surprising. And I would say this, that Jerry Nadler rarely surprises me, in part because he is an expert in delivering incoherence. Keep in mind that Jerry Nadler has sought the chairmanship of the House committee. Why? Because he had a pre-commitment to impeach this particular president. But if you're going to impeach President Trump, if you are going to make your case to United States senators, you do not get up and essentially call them treasonous, or that they're, you don't criticize them for engaging in treachery unless they totally agree with you. I think the problem fundamentally is Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff have offered a fundamentally flawed, fundamentally thin case against President Trump. That's the problem. And if they wanted, for instance, additional witnesses, they should have taken time in the House of Representatives to seek a judicial order requiring witnesses, for instance, to appear. They didn't take the time. They were in a rush to judgment. And then they were in a rush to hold on to the articles of impeachment for roughly 30 days. So Nancy Pelosi could essentially extort from the United States Senate rules that she liked. She failed, and then she had a signing ceremony with souvenir pens, which suggests at the end of the day that the Democrats have always been unserious about a very, very serious and important process.
Folks, we're going to be joined in just a moment by Jordan Sekulow to give us an update from on the ground in the United States Senate as they prepare to get back underway in the impeachment trial. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, the number to call is 1-800-684-3110. We are going to be getting to your calls shortly after hearing from Jordan. So again, the number is 1-800-684-3110. 3110. But I agree with the guys on something as serious and solemn as impeachment proceedings. It's so important that the senators focus in on the substance of the case, on the facts at hand, to see if they rise to the threshold that is necessary for removal. And I think hearing accusations of the Senate being involved in a cover-up is a distraction. I don't think it's what should happen in these proceedings. And quite frankly, I think it is very poor strategy. I don't think it's the way to convince senators to vote with you. Our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, acting in his private capacity as the president's counsel, was actually asked about this after the proceedings last night. I wanted you to hear what he had to say about it. This is Bite 7, Jay Sekulow last night.
Jerry Nadler accused the United States Senate of being liars and also of a cover-up. He accused the president's lawyer, Pat Cipollone, of basically, you know, trying to make it as if he had done something that was unethical. He was representing his client. And then he makes the statement on the floor of the United States Senate when he says executive privilege and other nonsense. These are constitutional privileges recognized by the Supreme Court.
Constitutional privileges recognized by the Supreme Court. And I think there was an obligation, Professor Hutchison, for the president's legal counsel to respond to that. I mean, there was an ensuing admonishment from the Chief Justice that I think was really directed at Chairman Nadler, that both sides should cool it, should tone the temperature down, so to speak. There was some reporting that Senator Collins had been offended by Chairman Nadler's remarks, and that may have led to the Chief Justice saying something. But at the end of the day, it struck me as a distraction. It struck me as there not being facts and merits to be rooted in. So Chairman Nadler resorted to a personal attack. I think if you're an advocate for the president defending your client, you have to respond to that. These are privileges that are set up and enshrined in the Constitution. And I think the Chief Justice was right to try to put them back on track. But I would suggest to you that if we see more of those distractions today, the American people need to recognize it's because the House managers are choosing not to put forward a fact-based argument.
I think that's precisely correct. So calling executive privilege, which is fundamentally recognized by the United States Constitution, nonsense, suggests Jerry Nadler and Adam Schiff do not have a case. I think it's also important to note, for instance, that Adam Schiff is already claiming the illegitimacy of a Trump reelection. Schiff now says that with the general election still only 9 months away, with zero evidence of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign in 2016, with the wrap-up of the special counsel's investigation and the wrap-up of Crossfire Hurricane, and with the Inspector General's report, basically all of those investigations show one thing. President Trump did not collude. President Trump did not engage in any illegitimate attempt to change a single vote. And according to Bob Mueller, no votes were changed. So Schiff cannot claim at the end of the day that the American people should be deprived of their right to choose the next president of the United States.
Folks, after the break, we'll be joined by Jordan Sekula to give you an update on the ground. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, 1-800-684-3110. But you're not going to want to miss this. After the break, we'll have an update from our executive director, Jordan Sekula.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., joined by Colonel Wes Smith and Professor Harry Hutchison. We are waiting to be joined by Jordan Sekulow, our executive director, and of course, a member of the president's legal defense team. He's going to give us an update after day one of the House manager's case, their presentation led by Chairman Adam Schiff. He's actually joining us now, so we're delighted to have you, Jordan. Thank you for taking some time to jump in and update our listeners. What's the latest after day one, after the House managers have had one of their 3 days to present their case?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time talking to some senators while we were on the floor during breaks, and I will tell you, though, you know, Adam Schiff can talk for a very long time, that the American people, as well as those senators, have all heard this. It is a repeat of exactly the same allegations with no evidence, hearsay, presumptions, opinions, policy disputes, but again, no evidence and no quid pro quo evidence. Even when they read through the transcript and when Adam Schiff had to actually read the real transcript, it's very damaging to their case because it doesn't talk about withholding any kind of weapons or a meeting. And in fact, the president did meet, with President Zelensky. And you know what one of their complaints was, Dan? But it wasn't at the White House. I mean, this is absurd. You meet with the president of the United States, the United Nations, the president of the United States, the commander in chief. Ukraine is, we are an important ally for Ukraine, and it does improve our national security, but there's a lot of trouble in Ukraine. This was a untested leader who got elected first president but did not have parliamentary control. Then he got parliamentary control. Then we got to figure out, and even heard from people like Senator Lindsey Graham who said, you know, that he was an unknown. So, of course, you would hold back a little before you knew if this guy was going to be legitimate and you should give him weapons, of all things, to start firing at Russians. And by the way, this administration, unlike the Obama administration, decided ultimately was already providing those kind of weapons before this whole controversy. So I think, again, it's going to drone on today. It's going to drone on. I think they'll probably take most of their 3 days. Again, I will tell you that those senators are sitting there hearing these speeches that are going over the amount of time. It's supposed to go for like 2 hours and then take a break. And the accusations they're making, calling them treacherous if you don't do what House Democrats want. Remember, it was an impeachment supported by only House Democrats, not a single Republican. And they're talking to a Republican majority Senate and telling them, these Democrats are telling them, if you don't do what we want, you are treacherous to your country. You are part of a cover-up, and you are helping the president cheat to win the next election. You know what's very telling? They know President Trump is on track to win the next election, and they're trying to do anything possible to discredit that. So, Dan, what we're excited about is we, on Saturday, yes, we have to go through today and tomorrow, but on Saturday, we get to begin our case. I don't think Saturday will necessarily be as long because of Saturday. But it will be the beginning where we get to make our full case and take as much time as we need, not only to rebut the misstatements, inaccuracies, and outright lies from the House managers, who are all Democrats. I mean, again, because it was only a Democrat impeachment. We also are going to put on the affirmative case for why, regardless of all, we'll rebut all of their arguments, but then the case about why with everything swinging out there, and there's all this new information now. They try to make it about Rudy Giuliani. Now the Z that he's talking about isn't Zelensky. And now we've got new reports about who the whistleblower contacted and how much hatred they had for the president, how they were coordinating this with Schiff's staff even more. I mean, it's all falling apart for the Democrats, especially when it comes to those key senators who will ultimately, after we present our case, make the decision about whether to vote on the two articles. And we know that if that vote occurs, the president will be exonerated or vote to hold witnesses. Now, I'm not going to predict either way right now. It's still too early. But I will tell you that for the ones that count, for the people who count, this is not, I don't think, going the right way. So ignore the kind of liberal media on this. So Adam Schiff could talk so long. Well, if you're a U.S. senator sitting there or one of us sitting there, that's wonderful. But if you've heard it, that he can talk so long, but if you've heard this already and he's doing it for 2.5 hours and taking a 10-minute break and doing it to someone else for 2.5 hours. And also, I key on this point, Fan, he said yesterday, you know, if we don't impeach, who's going to protect our democracy? How about the American people? You know, there's such a disdain from these Democrats for, and I say that because that's who it is, for the American voter on both sides of the aisle, that they can't, they're the protectors of democracy because they ultimately choose their president. They get to vet them. They get to decide who to vote for based on all these different kinds of reasons why they vote. And it's Americans, not House Democrats, in a partisan impeachment that protect America's, they call it democracy, I'd say our republic, our democratic republic. And again, I just wanted to underscore that today. We're going to hear more of the same. I mean, listen, you're going to hear them again, attack, attack, attack. And they're playing up to a few Republican senators. Their only goal right now is to try and get witnesses. They know ultimately they will lose. So that is, you know, that's the key. So that's my update for today. We're going to get ready to go in there, and then I'll be back on with you tomorrow, and I'm sure I'll be able to get my dad on as well before we head in.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jordan. I tell you what, folks, I don't think anywhere else, actually I know nowhere else, are you going to be able to get an update from the president's legal team live on air as they prepare for day two of the House manager's case. And then assuming the House managers take a third day, then the president's legal team would be up. It would be their turn beginning on Saturday. You heard Jordan talk about some of the variables about how that will go schedule-wise. But I agree with Jordan. I think the thing I was most interested to hear from him is the 10 in the room, because as I watched the proceedings, both during the proceedings and then after, as there was reaction, I sensed that it was not connecting with the senators that the House managers would have to convince to bring a case. And I think you heard that echoed from Jordan on the line there. We played it earlier, but Senator Murkowski said that she was offended by Chairman Nadler. Well, you don't want to be offending the people you have to convince to vote along with you. Folks, we're going to get right back to the impeachment trial in just a minute, but as we head into this break, I did want to mention one other piece of news that, as someone who's worked in the pro-life movement for a long time, defending the sanctity of life, I was so heartened to see, and that was that yesterday, on the 47th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, President Trump announced that he is going to be the very first sitting president to attend the March for Life, which takes place tomorrow, advocating for life. President Trump is going to attend in person. He's going to address the crowd. He will be the very first sitting president to do it. I actually want to get into this issue just a little bit more in the next segment of the broadcast. We'll get right back to impeachment. We'll take your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. But I was so heartened to see that there's been a lot of actions in defense of life from this administration. You think about Title 10. You think about the expanded Mexico City policy, the conscience regulations, the abortion money in Obamacare. On down the line you go. But the fact that he is going to attend in person is a great thing. And folks, what a great thing to be joined by Jordan Sekulow, member of the president's legal defense team, in this segment of the broadcast. Get that update. He said he'll be with us tomorrow. Hopefully Jay will be able to join him as well. But as we go to this break, if you want to join us, if you want to participate in the life conversation or talk about what's ahead in this impeachment trial, the number to call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Day one of the House manager's case in the books. 2 days to go, folks. Buckle in.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now your host, Dan Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C., joined by Colonel Wes Smith and Professor Harry Hutchison. And of course, the news of the day is the impeachment trial that is ongoing in the United States Senate. One of the 3 days for the House managers to present their case is in the books. And we are going to get right back to that conversation very shortly. If you want to participate in it, we still have some phone lines open for you. We will get to your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. But I wanted to take just a couple of minutes in this segment to mention another issue because the significance really is there. I know most people are paying attention to the impeachment proceedings, but other work continues. And to the credit of this administration, they continue to act on behalf of religious freedom. We saw the 9 rules that were issued by agencies earlier last week. But tomorrow is the March for Life. Yesterday was the 47th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and tomorrow is the March for Life. And on the anniversary yesterday, President Trump announced that he would be the first sitting president to attend the march in person and address the crowd. We've had some taped remarks in the past, but he will be the first president to do so. And frankly, folks, it's just the latest in a long line of demonstrations and actions by this administration that life is a priority for them. If you get the emails from the ACLJ, yesterday you got an email talking about some of the life issues, talking about the issue of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. This is the bill that says if a baby is born alive, they are entitled to medical assistance just like every other human being. Should be common sense, should be automatic, and yet it's not in this country. There is what is called a discharge petition on the floor of the United States House that says if a majority of the House, 218 members, signs that discharge petition, Speaker Pelosi has to call a vote on that legislation. That discharge petition is at 204 right now. The 204th signature was provided by Jeff Van Drew, the former Democrat who became a Republican over the impeachment proceedings. He has already signed that discharge petition. It needs to get to 218 to get a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives. Of course, we are advocating for that, and you can sign our petition at aclj.org if you want to echo those thoughts. But I want to go to Professor Hutchison on this. We're going to get right back to the impeachment discussion, but Professor Hutchison, no issue more central to ACLJ members, to us, to our work at the ACLJ, than the issue of life. Such a great thing to see the president announce that he's going to attend the march tomorrow. I think he'll probably mention the Born Alive bill, but just his presence, Harry, says a lot about his devotion to this issue.
Than, your analysis is spot on. President Trump has made many promises with respect to religious liberty, with respect to trade, with respect to the economy, and with respect to his support for pro-life Americans. He continues to show support by speaking tomorrow at the March for Life. And this is a stunningly important development, and it is consistent with the fact that he has appointed a large number of pro-life judges, that he has cut taxpayer funding for abortions here and abroad, and he continues to call for the end of late-term abortions. So I think the Trump administration has been very, very consistent. They have championed life, and I think that's very, very important given the cultural moment that we are in now. We have seen recently attempts, and sometimes successful attempts, by the government in New York State and in Virginia to essentially allow abortion to be performed on live births. And that is a retrograde development which brings back those stunningly horrible days when eugenics was widely supported by progressives in the United States. And so I think President Trump has done an outstanding job in supporting the pro-life cause.
And I think there would have been a great temptation, to ignore all the other issues while the impeachment proceedings continued. The president has not done that. We are deeply gratified for that. We'll, of course, play some sound from that speech as it's available either tomorrow or next week. After this break, your phone calls and more updates on the impeachment trial. 1-800-684-3110.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Secular Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We're going to get to your phone calls here shortly. 1-800-684-3110. Still a couple of lines open. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, call now. Grab one of them. 1-800-684-3110. But before we get to those, I did want to have a conversation about this issue that keeps coming up and that Jay had to address last night during the press spray. We'll play a little bit of sound from that for you in just a moment. But I wanted you to have an understanding. When you hear about this issue of certification of these funds that are in question and that the administration held up, by the way, it's a very common practice for funds to be held up until certain criteria are met. One of those criteria is that sometimes statutes that Congress pass to appropriate these funds require the executive branch to issue certain certifications. And many times they will say that, you know, this agency or this office has to certify that certain things have been met, you know, a corruption reform or, you know, maybe some other sort of cleanup inside the country. All sorts of different certifications have to happen. And the statute says that that agency has to sign off on them before the funds can be released. And that's really what happened in this case. Funds were held up. And one of the arguments you'll hear from the House managers is that, well, certification had been made, so the president could not hold up these funds. Folks, I'm not privy to any of the arguments that the president's legal defense team will make there, but I can tell you from having years and years of policy background what happens here. Who is the chief executive? Who is ultimately responsible for each of these offices and agencies who are statutorily given this authority to make certification? It's the president of the United States. He's the chief executive. In fact, all you have to do is read the very first line of Article 2 of the Constitution. It says, the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. It could not be more plain. You will hear House managers say when this argument is brought forward, well, that is an argument that the president can do anything he wants. No, it is not. That is not the argument that is put forward. But when the Article 1 branch, Congress, passes a statute that says the executive branch, no matter which agency or which office, has to certify under the law that these criteria have to be met. That is ultimately the responsibility of the president of the United States. And whether a secretary or an officer or a desk bureaucrat, they can certify all they want, but all of us have these jobs. We can send something up to our boss, and ultimately the final decision rests with him or her. So if I make a recommendation and ultimately our chief counsel, Jay Sekulow, decides to go another direction, he is the one that is responsible. He is entitled to make that decision. It is no different in this case. I'll read it for you again. First line of Article 2. The executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. So if Congress says the executive branch has to certify that certain corruption standards have been met, it is ultimately the job of the president of the United States to make that decision. So when you hear Chairman Schiff say it again today, I'm sure he will. I just wanted you to have a little bit of that background. Also, a brief response on this same issue, on the issue of policy disputes and who has the authority to make those decisions, from Jay Sekulow after last night's proceedings. This is Byte 6, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
I mean, these policy disputes are not what the founders had in mind when it came to the seriousness of an article of impeachment or a conviction on impeachment.
And Wes, I'll come to you on this, because this is really what Article 1 of these impeachment articles is all about. I mean, they want to call it abuse of power, but it really comes down to policy disputes. The Foreign Service apparatus did not like the decision that the President of the United States made in holding up these funds. But Wes, that is not really particularly relevant. The president is not entitled, obligated, or bound to agree with unelected bureaucrats who have one opinion on a policy or another.
Absolutely. You know, and the founding fathers of our country, they debated whether or not to have sort of a joint executive group, like a small committee, two or three people at the head of the government. And they came up with this idea of, no, they would have a unitary executive. And that is the executive branch, unlike the legislative and the judicial branches, that all of the power would be vested in one individual. And the president is that person. And you alluded to it, bureaucrats and career staff people do not set policy. Under the Constitution, you know, the execution of our laws and foreign policy, things like that, they are set by whoever happens to be that chief executive. And back to the deal concerning these funds, you know, under law, then, foreign aid, when it's been appropriated, like the money for Ukraine was, it has to be, you know, given out, you know, to the country that to which it was authorized during that fiscal year. That's really what the law says. There is no timetable. There's no specific date during the year when the president does this. Once it's appropriated by Congress, he has until September the 30th to release the funds. And as you also said, you know, he has an obligation to use due diligence and to make sure that the funds are going to be used correctly and that they're taking a look at corruption, in this case in Ukraine. But as long as he sent the funds in that fiscal year, he has not broken the law, and he is the chief executive, and he sets foreign policy.
Yeah, and don't forget the funds were released, and I would go to Harry on this. Harry, there's a reason that it is the president of the United States that's given the sole of power over the executive branch. It's a little bit different in the legislative branch because you have so many elected members. Between the House and the Senate, you have 535 members who the American voters sent to Washington, D.C. to write the law. When you go over to the executive branch, the bureaucrats aren't elected, Harry. I mean, the American people voted and selected the president of the United States to go and represent them, and that is why that Article 2 vest the sole power in him rather than spreading it out over bureaucrats. Harry, nobody elected the bureaucrats.
Absolutely. But many bureaucrats believe, gifted with their own arrogance, that they know more about policy than the president of the United States. And I would say to those individuals, if you truly believe it, why don't you run for president? Why don't you get elected? Then you would have the right under the Constitution to set policy. But until you get that power, until you become the President of the United States, you are acting merely in an advisory capacity. And the President of the United States is entitled to enact a policy that is contrary to all of the recommendations of his advisors. That's the way the system works. That's the way the Constitution reads. And so these bureaucrats need to read the text of the Constitution rather than rely simply on what their professors at Harvard and Princeton and Yale have told them. These unelected bureaucrats are basically leaning on claims made by unelected elites.
Yeah, and the Congress also has the ability to write a statute, write an appropriation bill that changes the requirements, changes the certifications, or does not allow the executive branch as much authority as these statutes clearly did. Folks, I want to play a little bit of sound from you from just a few minutes ago from Senator Tim Scott and then also Senator Tom Cotton. I see the senators actually filing into the chamber now as we speak. We're about 15 minutes away from resuming trial, day three of the trial, day two of the House manager's case. But I just want to give you a little bit of a flavor of some of the reaction from inside the chamber. Let's start with Bite 20. This is Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina.
The goal of this entire process is not to remove the president from office. It's simply to remove certain Republican senators, Colorado, North Carolina, Iowa, Maine, and Arizona from office. And this is absolutely an opportunity for them to try to overtake the Senate.
Yeah, I agree with Senator Scott. It's not a particularly good sound for House managers. Does not sound like they've made inroads with him. Let's also hear from Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas. Obviously been in the chamber for all of the proceedings. This is him just this morning, so before the proceedings started today, but after he heard day one of the House manager's presentation. This is Bite 21.
What we heard yesterday were repetitive arguments over and over again based on little more than hearsay and the House Democrats' objections to Donald Trump being the president and being able to set foreign policy for this country. I expect, unfortunately, that we'll probably hear more of the same today.
Wes, it's almost time to go to a break, but just, I mean, that's a small sample. You're going to have to convince 20 Republicans to convict the president of the United States. Doesn't sound to me like the House managers are on their way to doing that.
No. And the more they talk, I think the more their credibility withers and their case weakens, you know. Their motive is political damage. They know, ultimately, that the president's going to be acquitted. And so what they are trying to do is inflict political damage. It's about the desire for raw political power in November. So to put the nation through this and to misuse the Constitution this way simply for political advantage, then that is the real abuse of power. It's an abuse of power by Congress.
Folks, in the last segment of the broadcast, we will get to your phone calls. If you want to be a part of the broadcast, still some lines open for you. 1-800-684-3110. If you call in, we can get you on air. Also, you can comment on Facebook. Folks, after this break, we'll tee up what's ahead for you. Two more days of the House managers presenting their case. I hope you can endure it. And we're talking about roughly 16 hours over the next 2 days. Chairman Schiff, Chairman Nadler, and whoever else they send to the microphone. Two more days. Again, if you want to make a comment, 1-800-684-3110.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We're going to get right to your phone calls and Facebook comments in this segment of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. You can still be a part of the broadcast. 1-800-684-3110. Let's start with Carrie calling from Texas on line 4. Carrie, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. What would you recommend those of us out here who are watching this event happening right now? What would you recommend we do? What would our small part and contribution be to assist in this matter? What would you say?
Yeah, so I'd say a couple of things, and I'd open this up to Harry and Wes as well. But first of all, to get informed about the arguments that are at play. I mean, there's been a lot filed in this case, a lot of long, lengthy legal briefs. And if you really want to get in-depth, you should read all of them. But you can easily find online, just by Googling or going to the government websites, the answer that the president's legal team responded in summary to the articles of impeachment. It's 7 pages long in total. It includes a cover page. So it's really about 5.5 pages of arguments, and that will help you understand the core arguments at play here. And if you just read those 5.5 pages, I think you'll be up to speed enough to have an informed opinion on the issues that you hear debated from either side, from their perspective on the floor of the United States Senate. And then you need to engage with your federal officials. Of course, your two senators have a vote in the ultimate articles of impeachment, whether or not to convict and remove the president. But also your House members have a role in this. What did they do during this process? Did they advocate for a fair process that included due process? How did they vote in the end? Each one of those House members is up for re-election. And I'm not just talking about whether or not you vote for or against them. Engage them in a dialogue about how you think a president should be treated, what threshold should have to be crossed if they are going to be removed. I would go to Professor Hutchison. Those would be my top line recommendations: to read the president's answer, to get informed, and then to engage with your federal officials. What other items would you recommend to the caller?
Well, I would also encourage listeners to help inform their neighbors, their friends, and their relatives. I think when people actually see the president's response to all of the accusations, they will, in some measure, be outraged and motivated. In addition, I would encourage all of our listeners to engage in prayer for both the president and the president's legal team.
I'm going to go back to the phones, but folks, I want to play for you some sound from Chairman Adam Schiff on the Senate floor January 21st. So what's that? I think that's Tuesday. This is a fairly shocking line. I'm going to play it for you without a whole lot of setup, but then I do want to make a comment afterwards. This is Byte 23, Chairman Adam Schiff presenting this case to the United States Senate.
The president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won.
President's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box. No, Chairman Schiff, that's exactly where the president's conduct should be decided. We live in a democratic republic where the people get to choose their leaders, and the threshold for removing them has to be incredibly high. The burden of proof has to be on you, on Chairman Schiff, to have these articles enacted, adopted, and have the president convicted and removed. The reprisal for it, the ultimate decision, must, it not just can, it must be left with the American people. That is what our entire way of government is rooted on. Folks, that is a very dangerous argument to put forward by the chairman. Quite frankly, I'm disappointed he did it. I thought there were moments yesterday where his presentation was you know, smooth and well presented, but that is an argument that cannot stand. Again, he said the president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box. Exactly wrong. Whether you support the president or oppose the president, it is you, the American people, who decide who your president is, who your congressman is, which is, by the way, the position that the chairman holds, who your senators are, who your local officials are. If we ever lose that power, we lose our very way of government. I hope he will walk back from that statement. I don't have a whole lot of expectation, but that argument must not be left to stand. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Vonda calling on line one from Indiana. Vonda, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
I'd like to make a comment. I'd like to know why these people have not read the transcript. Why are they just believing what's being told, circulated as a lie? I've read it.
Yep. It's a good point, Vonda. I would tell you we read every word of that transcript of the July 25th call on this air. I've certainly read it. I actually think that most of the American people know the gig here. I would go to Colonel Smith on this. Maybe the senators do or don't. I think probably most of them know the gig by now. But I think the American people know what's at play here. I think that's why support for these proceedings continue to fall. I do agree with Vonda's point that there are some very accessible and attainable documents. I mentioned the president's answer. Certainly the transcript that was released by the president. It was not discovered. The president released the transcript of that call that formed the very foundation of these articles. I think the American people know what's in it. I think the gig is up when it comes to them, Wes.
Oh, absolutely. You know, what we're witnessing, Than, this is an act. It really is an act. It's a disgusting act, but an act nonetheless. They are so disingenuous. And by disingenuous, I mean the House managers and the Democrats in the House. It's fake indignation. It is faux shock and concern for the nation. I think in their heart of hearts, if they were honest, they know that this is overblown, that the charges are made up. They know that an acquittal is certain. They know that their case is weak, and yet they are pressing on in spite of that. And again, it's strictly for pure, raw political advantage as they perceive it. The American people are smarter than this, Than. And the more they talk, I think the more the American people will wise up. And the real result of all of this charade will come in November, because I really think the American people are going to have a negative reaction in November to what they're witnessing this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. Folks, just about a minute and a half left in the broadcast. I want to give you a quick glimpse ahead to what you're going to see. And then I do want to play that sound again. I think this is really important sound from Chairman Schiff that has to be combated. But just quickly, here in just a few minutes, the United States Senate is going to come back into session to begin day two of the House managers presenting their case. Should they choose to use it, they also have Friday to use, 3 days total. And then the president's legal defense team would be up. So if the House managers use all their time, that would start on Saturday, and they would have 3 days to present their case before we get to senators' questions and then debate and votes on motions. But folks, I'm going to play this sound for you again to close the broadcast today. It's not a very uplifting moment, but I think it's an important moment to combat against. We cannot let this stand. This is Byte 23, Chairman Adam Schiff presenting the articles of impeachment on the floor of the United States Senate and saying that these decisions cannot be made at the ballot box. Byte 23.
The president's misconduct cannot be decided at the ballot box, for we cannot be assured that the vote will be fairly won.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely incorrect. You've got your right to your opinion. I know you're fulfilling your duty to present these articles, but this is at the core of the issue that is being debated. Who gets to decide who our leaders are? It's the American voters. These are the decisions that must be made at the ballot box. There is a procedure for removing a president, and I know that is what you think you are embarking upon, but the threshold has to be very high, and ultimately the goal has to always be returning power to the people. Returning the power to where? To the ballot box. That is where the president's conduct should be decided. It's where it must be decided. Respectfully, sir, you are exactly wrong on this point. I hope you will walk back from it today as these proceedings get underway.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.